Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the People Speak Radio Show. Again, this is your host, Charles Giuliani. We're joined today by two important guests, Medea Benjamin, who is the author of a new book. It's called Drone Warfare. So we'll be talking about that. In addition, we have another guest, Tige Berry, personal friend of Medea's, and as I called him earlier before the show started, her partner in crime. He's actually the founder of Code Pink. And the two of them recently took two trips, one to Pakistan and another to Gaza. So they'll be sharing their experiences with us on those two trips, as well as talking about Medea's new book, Drone Warfare. So with no further ado, let's welcome Medea and Tige. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, glad
Thanks
to have you.
Thanks for having me, but I have to make a change here. I wish I could say I was one of the co-founders of Code Pink, but I was there from pretty much the beginning, but I am not a co-founder.
Oh, okay. Well, one of the instigators, I guess.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm sure you're going to want to share that with us, too, your experiences there as well. So much to talk about, even though we're commercial, well, not totally commercial free. We'll take one break in the halfway through the show, a short break. But still, an hour isn't enough time, especially with such a list of things to talk about here. So let's just jump right into it. I guess we'll start, Medea, with discussion of your book on drone warfare. First of all, what got you started into researching this?
I realized that many years into the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, the American people were tired of war, and the government, particularly the Pentagon, was looking for ways to make it safer for U.S. soldiers, and the drones were a way to do that because they're piloted here in the United States. There are no U.S. military that are risking their lives, and it's a great way to continue to make war without incurring the negatives of soldiers' deaths and injuries, and it's cheaper than having ground troops, and it's also can be done in secret. And so as I realized that this was a tool that was being used not only in the places where we're at war, like in Iraq and Afghanistan, but also in places that the American people didn't even know, like Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia. And the more I thought about it, the more appalled I was about this idea of waging war from the comfort of a air-conditioned room in a nice ergonomic chair in an Air Force base here where soldiers would kill by day by just pressing a button and then go home to their families at night. And meanwhile, they were killing people thousands of miles away that they know almost nothing about. So the whole idea of this remote control warfare made me feel like this was a dangerous precedent that was being set, and it was important to educate people, especially because it seemed at the time I was writing the book, that most Americans thought these drones were just a great alternative to boots on the ground. And I wanted to show them how dangerous they are, how many innocent people get killed, and how counterproductive they are.
It turns warfare into sort of a video game, doesn't it?
Well, that's right. And I think, Tige, you can talk about that, especially as a father of young boys.
Well, I think the reason I got involved with the drone issue is because I felt and I still feel that the American public has not had an opportunity to have a discussion about how much we want robotics in our lives. Today we went to Human Rights Council and had a meeting about autonomous drones, and that really is scary. We're getting to the point where there will be robots without a human in the loop. And before we get to these points where we're using drones in warfare, I believe that the American public should have input, because I feel that if you gave the American public the kind of information that was available at the time, even, about what would happen if we introduced atomic weapons into the world stage, that there would be this proliferation, and that atomic weapons would, that they were dangerous for our planet, I think people would have been able to maybe not go down this the dangerous path of nuclear weapons and all this pollution that's come from that. And today I think we have an opportunity, if we were allowed to have the information that we, that the government has about drones, drone warfare, and the actual fact that they are not as effective as we believe they are, and as a matter of fact, they are more dangerous to civilians. And I think that the American public would say, wait a minute, let's put a hold on these robotic killings, let's have a national conversation, let's put rules in place if we decide we want robots or drones, which are coming to our country very soon. President Obama requires, in a presidential decree, requires the FCC to open U.S. airspace, FAA to open U.S. airspace to up to 30,000 drones by 2015. And it's, we need a national conversation on drone warfare and robotics in society and as in general. And I know, like Medea was saying, I'm a father of two boys, ages 19 and 21, and they, although they were not big, they're not big with the video games, they would unfortunately be recipients of the this new lifestyle of living under 24/7 surveillance country.
It's pretty frightening stuff. I'm glad to hear that your son isn't interested in video games. Were you instrumental in that, or is that something that
Yes, I mean, we as a family, not only myself, but my sister, who had another boy of the same ages as my two sons, we came to a conclusion, we're from Venice, California, that we didn't want our kids to have war toys, and that we taught them about war, and we taught them that death and killing is not a patriotic thing. Death and killing is just what it is. It's murder. In even in the case of the military, I for one am a pacifist. I don't believe in military. I think that we should use diplomacy when after all has been lost. We should still try and use diplomacy.
Absolutely.
But I also have taught them that a lot of they were deprived a lot of the opportunities that I had when I was going to school, because of the lack of funds going into the schools. And I showed it to them, and they understand it.
You know, and Americans never stop to ask the bigger, deeper questions. What are we getting out of this? Even if you're not against the idea of mass killing, and that's all war is, it's an exercise in mass slaughter, mass murder. Even if you're not against that, if you think that there's some good reason for it, what is that good reason? And what does it, you know, what has it done for us? Look at all the wars we've fought, as I'm sure you know, in just the past few decades since the, you know, since World War II. What have any of these wars ever done for us except to put us in debt, cause the death and misery of really millions in our country and all the countries that we've invaded, but the death of, you know, tens of thousands of Americans just in the Cold War alone, maimed for life others physically and mentally, you know, millions of others, I'm sure, if you added them all up. What has it done? What have we gotten out of this?
Well, we've lost a hell of a lot of money on top of that. So when you think that even staying in Afghanistan now every week cost us $2 billion and what we could be using that money for at home,
Job creation. It's not just the lives,
it's the treasury.
Sure. How many people could have been bailed out from losing their homes? They have no problem bailing out billionaires that don't need our money. They're already filthy rich to begin with. The ones who do need money in time of crisis like that, you know, where's the government to help them? How many people have lost their homes? All this money for these phony wars that have done nothing for us could have been used, but you know, for things like that, helping people get out of these crisis situations. It's so deplorable, and yet people still continue to pay taxes for what? What are we paying taxes for? It doesn't benefit us. It only goes to big corporate America that doesn't need it. Oh, I'm on a roll. Sorry.
I'd just like to bring up an interesting situation that happened to us during the inauguration weekend. We decided to have a flash mob in Union Station here in Washington, D.C. And we were all coming up with ideas, and I had this inspiration listening to the 1967 speech, Vietnam War speech by Martin Luther King. And I thought it would be a great thing to go inside Union Station on his birthday and play on Martin Luther King's Day and play this speech to the people that were in Union Station. Because to me, 45 years ago, Martin Luther King was saying the same things we could say today.
Yeah.
Exactly the same. We have learned nothing. I've been to Vietnam recently, and Vietnam is the fastest growing economy in Southeast Asia. It's one of the freest places I've been in Southeast Asia. And we fought and lost 55,000 military people in Southeast Asia because of a war for what? And in 1967, Martin Luther King was telling our country how to get out of this war, simple course to get out of the war. And it took us until 1973 to do it. It's time for the politicians to listen to the people and not just following this path to destruction.
These wars clearly are designed to benefit only a few, a very small few, specifically Wall Streeters. I mean, that's become painfully obvious. There's no denying it now. I was getting some echo, but I guess it stopped now, so that's good. I guess somebody in the station realized.
Wanted to add to that it's not just Wall Street, it's these weapon manufacturers. And it's such a scam the way they keep us on this treadmill of producing weapons, even ones that are Cold War weapons that aren't going to be used, or weapons that the Pentagon says it doesn't want, or weapons that are vastly over budget.
I kind of use Wall Street as a term to incorporate all of that, even though a lot of these companies don't have their headquarters on Wall Street. That's kind of just a buzz term I use to refer to all the big corporations, big money, and yeah, absolutely.
Right.
These Pentagon contracting companies. Many times, especially under Bush, we saw this, where there weren't even any bids for the contracts. They were just awarded because somebody in the White House happened to work for this company or that company or you know, there's this swinging door.
Like Dick Cheney with Halliburton, who got the first $5 billion contract in Iraq before we even invaded.
Buddies in Bechtel,
well,
this
wasn't it interesting?
Between corporate America and Washington. Were you going to say something, Tig?
Yeah, I was just going to say to Medea, I mean, wasn't it very telling when one of the top scientists in robotics that takes absolutely no money from military contractors, Noel Sharkey from Britain, was in the meeting today when we were discussing a strategy to stop this, to get a ban on autonomous warfare. And I asked him a simple question, because I'm a rather simple guy, is it possible for the scientists of the world to come together and have an ethics rule or take an ethics oath about autonomous robots, so that they could, because the first thing out of the government's mouth will be that automation makes it a better society. And couldn't they come together and just say, we're going to not use it for military purposes? And he said, there's most scientists that do any type of research in robotics are all working under some kind of military contract. So most scientists, most research and development today by scientists is under military contracts. So how can you have civil society come out on top?
Yeah. Yeah, that's where the money is, unfortunately. So you're not going to get too many scientists aboard with you speaking out against this when that's their bread and butter. It's a very frightening situation. And, of course, this raises another question. You know, we're seeing this stuff being used here, not necessarily in a military sense, at least not yet anyway. But this is setting a frightening precedent, isn't it? They're using these drones flying around spying on Americans.
Well, they're not yet here in full force, because the legislation passed by Congress calls for the opening of our airspace by September 2015. But what we're seeing is hundreds of universities and government agencies, police departments, getting permits to start using these in an experimental way and really paving the way for 20 or 30,000 drones to be in our airspace in the next decade or two.
This is something right out of Orwell's 1984. I mean, it's beyond words. It's incredible. And most people are either oblivious to this, or the few that are aware, a great many of them don't seem to care. They don't seem to see a problem with this. You know, the old saying, absolute power corrupts absolutely. On that basis alone, you think people would realize, wait a minute, this is scary. When you have absolute power like that concentrated in a few hands, you're only going to get absolute corruption. If people don't believe there's absolute corruption in Washington, just look at that old saying. It's like, you know, when you let an egg go out of your hand, it's going to fall and break. It's a law. It's a fact. It's not something you can argue with. That's just how it works. When we allow this kind of power in the hands of a few like this, doesn't matter what country they're from, you're going to get corruption. This is going to be abused. It's already being abused in foreign countries, and it's certainly going to be abused here in the same way if a stop isn't put to this. This is incredibly serious stuff here, folks. Oh boy.
Well, I think that's right, but yet if people get aware and organize and mobilize, then we can make a difference. And especially the way in the last year people have started to organize around the military bases where the remote pilots are based, or at the headquarters of these companies, or in Congress. And then on the local level, people are starting to organize to try to keep drones away from the hands of their police forces. And in some cities, like in Seattle, they're actually laying down rules so that if they are used, that they will not violate people's privacy, that there will be a warrant if a drone is going to spy on somebody. So I think it's important for anybody listening to this program to get engaged, and that's why we have the website called droneswatch.org, where people can download a sample city resolution or download questions that you can ask of your police department, or sign on to petitions, or a number of different actions that they can take. So that's droneswatch.org.
And that's your website?
Yes.
droneswatch.org. Excellent. Go there, folks. Check it out. Great resource. Information there on how you can take action. And now's the time to do it. You don't wait until the thing's already out of hand and they've got the things flying overhead. You take the action now while there's time to stop this before it gets out of hand, because it will get out of hand. That's always the trend. If people remain apathetic and let a power-hungry system do what it wants, it's going to do what it wants at your expense in more ways than just financial. Just look at what Media has written in her book, what's going on in foreign countries, particularly in Pakistan, Afghanistan. They've got to bring that here if we don't put our foot down now before they get this thing underway. The other thing
your listeners should know is that they've used the drones overseas to kill Americans who are living overseas. And you wonder where the precedent and where the international law is if our government feels that it doesn't need to give Americans the right to surrender, the right to a trial, and the fact that there hasn't been a huge outcry from Congress or even from the legal community. So what is to tell us that when drones come here at home, even though they're saying, oh, they would only be used for search and rescue missions or to find your elderly grandfather when he's got Alzheimer's and is wandering in the streets, what's to keep them from weaponizing these drones and using them against us here at home?
Could you elaborate on that, some instances overseas where they've been used on Americans?
Well, they were used to kill an American-born cleric, Anwar al-Awlaki, who had returned to Yemen, was known for his fiery sermons, but the government has never released any evidence they have about his direct involvement in activities aimed at killing Americans. So they put him on a kill list and killed him with a drone attack, along with another American who was traveling in the car. But even worse yet is that 2 weeks later, they killed his son, a 16-year-old American born in Denver, not involved in any kind of military activities, but he was in a village in Yemen, sitting outside cooking and having a dinner and an evening with friends when a missile came in and killed all of them. So those are the examples of the killing of Americans so far, including, as I said, a 16-year-old that you think would evoke an outcry in the United States. How can you do this to American citizens? But people don't really know about it, since these are covert actions done by covert organizations like the CIA or the Joint Special Operations Command of the military, which is the most secretive part. It's hard for us to get this information. So I hope that as we go forward in our organizing work and trying to pressure for more of this information to become public, that people will get outraged as they hear more about the violations of the rights of citizens, basic rights, by using these lethal drones.
Now, what's the government's official claim in that regard? Are they denying that it was fired from a drone, period? Or, are they trying to say that it was something done, Al-Qaeda, or are they saying that, yeah, it was from a drone, but it was an accident? Are they making any statements at all about this?
Well, for the most part, the government doesn't have to say anything and usually doesn't say anything. The only time they really talk about these attacks is when they have killed somebody that they consider a high-level target, and then we hear a lot about it. But otherwise, it's just another militant killed. And since they define militant as any male of military age who's living in the areas where we use these drones, that means that you kill a 16-year-old and you can just turn around and say, well, he was a militant.
Oh, boy. Unbelievable. Anyway, a lot more to be said on this, I'm sure. Maybe we can come back to this, but there's so many other topics I want to get to. But this is incredibly serious. Before we leave this topic, in addition to the droneswatch.org website, Medea. Is there any other website you wanted to mention, like where people go get your book? Obviously, Amazon.com, but is there another site that you've set up where people can go?
Well, yeah, and maybe, Tige, you can talk a little about Brennan's upcoming nomination and the hearings that are happening.
Yeah, well, I mean, I hope the public, your listeners know that the architect of drone warfare and a former member of the Innermost Intelligence Committees under the Bush administration, John Brennan, has recently been, and he's now Obama's chief counterintelligence officer, who constructed this thing called Terror Tuesdays, where they get together in a room in the White House and they discuss who they're going to kill that week. He is now going for confirmation in front of the Senate to be the new director of Central Intelligence. And that is a scary thought. Right now, the biggest problem we have with drones, the most glaring problem, is that it's absolutely secret, and it's in the hands of the CIA. One thing that would really help is to get this drone program into more transparency, not total transparency, obviously, but a little more, and put it under the auspices of the military. Right now, being in the hands of the CIA, anything can be going on. They can use them anywhere they want, and we won't know about it unless they do something completely wrong. Like, for example, the killings that took place in the beginning in Yemen, where 40 people died in a drone strike. It was an accident. They were described by the Yemeni government took responsibility in the press, and the press described it as a Yemen operation. And it turned out later on that it was proved that it was the CIA doing these initial drone strikes in Yemen. And we can see how this collusion that's going on internationally to fight wars within secrecy is going to get worse and worse, and it will get worse in the United States under John Brennan. And I'm afraid that John Brennan is going to be confirmed, I think the American public should be aware that we need to stay on top of this this gentleman, because there's blood on his hands, and he supported the Bush administration enhanced interrogation program, or we call it torture.
And that should make people wonder too, what interest would a Democratic administration have in hiring a neocon? If there was genuine difference or even outright animosity, as the impression is often given, between the two parties, why would this man even be a consideration? There's something more going on behind the scenes, folks. This left-right Republican versus Democrat thing is nothing but a stage show, as I'm sure you'll both agree.
Well, as far as foreign policy goes, the United States, under every administration from the 1940s, has basically been following the foreign policy of the previous administration.
Sure.
The only difference between George Bush and Barack Obama is Obama kills, whereas George Bush made the, a mistake, or actually it's because I'm hoping that it was because of the pressure the American public put on him by coming into the streets and protesting the Bush administration, that he put people in rendition programs and in Guantanamo Bay and such like this, whereas now Obama just kills him. It's a little cleaner.
And yet he seems to be getting a free ride. You don't see half as much protest over his policies as you did with Bush, and yet what he's doing in many ways is even more draconian, as you just said. It's incredible.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what a mess. I tell you what, I'm sorry, go ahead, Medea.
We just saw that during the inauguration, that if this were happening under the Bush years, and the inauguration happened, there would be thousands of people out in the streets, but it was hard to even get a couple of hundred people together this time to protest the ongoing war in Afghanistan and the drone wars. So it's a difficult thing for the peace movement right now because people are reluctant to protest a Democratic president or somebody seemingly as nice as President Obama. And, of course, there are also other issues that are overshadowing this, like the economy. And then you add on to that the secrecy of the whole thing. It makes it very difficult to break through and get large numbers of people involved.
Right. Yeah, it's very scary times we're living in. I'll tell you what, folks, we're going to cut to a short break, just a couple minutes, and we'll be right back with our special guest. Stick with us.
This land is your land. This land is mine.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests from various realms of interest share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And like millions of other responsible Americans, I smoke pot. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana. And it's none of the government's business. Let's get the government out of our private lives once and for all and stop arresting smokers. Let's take a stand for personal freedom. To learn how you can help, go to normal.org.
Come, you masters of war.
Hello, this is Cindy Sheehan. America's war on terror has become a war of terror, with endless drone bombings, continuing military occupation, as well as detention, rendition, and torture still being practiced under the current administration. I lost my precious son Casey to war, and now work towards a day when not one more mother, son, or daughter will suffer such a loss. Listen to my podcast, read my blog, and come join me at any activities I attend near you. Please visit CindySheehanSoapbox.com for more information, and let's work for peace together.
Build, destroy.
Stellar Flutes is a family-owned and operated business dedicated to producing beautiful, finely handcrafted Native American-style flutes in a variety of sustainable woods. Stellar Flutes are used by both beginner and professional musicians with glowing praise. Easy to play and invoking a calm, meditative feeling, they make a perfect gift for you or someone special. For more information, including videos on selecting and playing the flute, please visit stellarflutes.com or call toll-free 1-888-427-8850.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. Once again, our guests this evening are Medea Benjamin. She's the author of a very important book, Drone Warfare. And you can go to a website and get information on how you can fight the use of drones, not only abroad, but prevent them from being used here. That's certainly a direction that they're moving in as we speak. You can go to droneswatch.org. Again, droneswatch.org. There's even some forms there that you can download that can help you to assist in fighting against this, having your voice heard. We're also joined, of course, by Tighe Barry. In fact, I want to go to you now, Tighe, and give us a summation of your involvement with Code Pink. Anything striking that stands out, you know, with your experience with them that you'd like to share? Anything that you know, any highlight points?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, Code Pink is a women's initiated peace and social justice movement, and in 2002, 2003, me and another. I'm originally from. I worked in Hollywood for 18 years as a prop man, and me and a producer friend of mine decided we wanted to stop the war in Afghanistan and definitely stop the war in Iraq, and we held a big peace rally on Santa Monica Beach with permit and stage and like that, and I met Arianna Huffington, and she asked me to be part of her gubernatorial campaign in California, and through that, a lot of women were involved in her campaign, and I met them, and this was the beginnings for me for getting involved with Code Pink, which was formed by a women's group of women who held a vigil in front of the White House to stop the war from starting in Iraq. And over the years, I've been graced with the ability to work with some of the most incredible peace activists. The women of Code Pink are a powerful, strong, fun, exciting group of women that are extremely active. They stay positive, and it's just been absolutely a wonderful ride. And I'm very excited to still be involved with Code Pink and to still see, even over the inauguration, even though we're far less in number this time, you could still feel the hunger that the people have for actions that Code Pink does produce. People get excited about our actions, and they were excited about what we recently did at the NRA press conference, and they were excited to see us at the both the Republican and Democratic conventions. We're a nonpartisan group.
Maybe we should explain the NRA press conference, because I don't know if people realize that we were the ones that stood up during that press conference with Wayne LaPierre and held banners saying, NRA, stop killing our kids, and NRA, you have blood on your hands. And that's something that went around the world with the pictures everywhere, and people were really excited to see someone standing up to the NRA bullies.
Does Code Pink have a website? I'm sure they must.
Yes, it's codepink.org.
Okay, great. So codepink.org, and again, drones.
Oh, yeah, definitely watch. I would say your listeners should go to codepink.org and definitely go to the Flickr site and see some of the pictures of previous and just recent protests that we've done. They're colorful, exciting, and active.
And go to YouTube, too, and just search for Code Pink, and you'll see lots of amazing videos.
All right. We're running short on time. I know both of you mentioned you need to get going here by about 10 of. I'm hoping to wind things down or end the show by 10 of, as I promised. So in the few minutes we got left, I wanted you to give some highlights both of the Pakistan trip and the Gaza trip, and then we'll get to some questions that we got here. So let's start with Pakistan. Anything that really stands out that you wanted to share with us, your experiences there?
Maybe I'll do the Pakistan and you do Gaza, Tig.
Fine.
That works. So Pakistan, we went with 34 Americans. We wanted to go up to the place, the tribal areas where the drones have been killing so many people. We were told by our embassy that it was a very dangerous thing to do. We shouldn't go. And we went anyway, and we had a chance to meet with people who had been the victims of our drone attacks, had lost loved ones, or had been physically harmed, and people who told us about how these drones are intimidating and the entire community because they're staying above people's homes 24/7 and frightening the people, especially the children. But we were welcomed with open arms, and the people told us that they wanted to live in peace, that these drones were turning so many people against America. And we came back convinced that not only were these drones inhumane, but they were so counterproductive, because no matter what somebody's politics were, and most of the people in Pakistan are certainly not sympathetic to Al-Qaeda or the Taliban, but they are not sympathetic towards the U.S. either, and that is because of these drone attacks. So we had a really wonderful opportunity to share with people and to be a positive face of the Americans, telling them that we cared about their lives and that we would go home to work hard to change our government's policy.
Excellent. Let's go on to the Gaza visit. Did you want to take that one, Ty?
Well, we went to Gaza right after Operation Cast Lead in 2009. We were there about a week afterwards. And I saw destruction on a level that I had never really witnessed. It was just devastating. And to see the civilian areas that were just brutalized and crushed. And this time, when we went back after Operation Pillar of Cloud, now we have been back many times. I myself have been back, been in Gaza 9 times, and we've taken 8 delegations in over the years. But this time, when we went in, my witness of the destruction of Gaza was different. They weren't targeting police stations or government buildings as much as they were just indiscriminately shooting at or taking out or destroying targets that didn't make any sense. Houses, apartment buildings, farming areas, spots in the middle of the city. And 97% of all the casualties in the Operation Pillar of Cloud, this last one, was civilian. So yet this time they didn't make the mistake of keeping the media out. So every time CNN would report on a bomb that would destroy a family of 12 in Gaza City, they would have to preface it with the tens of thousands of supposed rockets that fall on Israel every day or every 10 years. They just change their statistics all the time,
right,
from Gaza. And it's just, it's really sad to hear the reporting that comes out, because I've been in both countries, both areas. I've been in Palestine territory and Israeli territory, Israeli-occupied Palestine and Israel proper. And I have seen the difference in the destruction. 90-some percent of all small rockets that come from Gaza end up falling in the middle of the desert. But the thing also that stuck out in my mind was seeing that actually even the people that are my friends in Gaza, who are opposed to any kind of war or any kind of killing on either side, seemed to be a little elated that actually the people of the government in Gaza actually was able to strike deeper and deeper into Israel, striking a bit of fear in the government of Israel and setting up a scenario where they believe that the reason that the government in Israel stopped the shelling of people in Gaza was because of the fear that was coming to Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. We don't know the actions of the Israeli government, but we do know that the fact that even those that are opposed to any kind of rockets going from Gaza into Israel, being a little elated by the fact that they've actually struck back at this bully that's been pounding them for 40 years now or 60 years now, is sad. It's really sad.
Now, did any of this, any of what you did over there, was this done under the auspice of Code Pink? Are they involved in that at all, or are they strictly domestic in their protests?
No, Code Pink. It was all Code Pink.
Oh, it was? I didn't realize that they were involved with that as well. That's good. That's very good. I'd like to spend more time on that as well, but we've got a bunch of questions here, and we've only got about 7 minutes or so left, so I thought we'd go to some of those questions, if you don't mind.
Great.
And, these are addressed to both of you, so I don't know which ones each of you want to take, but this is from Ed in Illinois, and he asks, What do you both think of the reasons why Max Cleland and Henry Kissinger resigned from the 9/11 Commission? Of course, they gave two completely different reasons, but is that something you wanted to take on, Tig? Or
not really.
Kind of out of the scope of our discussion here tonight.
Yeah.
Okay, we can skip that one. We got, well, maybe I'll just say this. Kissinger resigned because of his business ties. That was his own admission, his own words. And Cleland resigned because he said he was disgusted that the American people were being ripped off, that, you know, the commission wasn't really investigating hard questions. So those were two different issues. Anyway, let's go to Clifford. Sure, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
No, my whole opinion about this is that when a government lies to you for so long and for so many times and is consistent in their lying and obfuscating and hiding the truth, that when, you know, people ask questions about what took place in New York in 2001, it's, you know,
how can you expect anything different?
Yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, this one is from Clifford in Texas, and for some reason I'm getting a feedback again. I don't know why, kind of an echo. Anyway, Clifford in Texas asks, what gives Obama the authority to create war with a country that we are not at war with? Well, I don't think he's creating war, he's just continuing it. But anyway, and how does the War Powers Act come into play?
Well, it's a very good question, and there has been a real abuse of executive power under this administration. When the Obama administration got involved in the conflict in Libya, there were congresspeople from the left, like Dennis Kucinich, and the right, like Ron Paul.
That was Medea going away. What she was trying to say is, obviously, is that what took place in Libya was really out of the scope of the War Powers Act, and the Bush administration was given a blank check, basically, after 9/11, that they could attack those that were involved in the terrorist attack on the United States. Well, they've taken that way beyond. They're killing people that were 5 and 7 years old at the time, and it's time to end this war on terror. Get back to where we have rules of warfare, rules of how we get into war and how we conduct ourselves in war. Just over the weekend, I would highly advise your listeners to go and research a recent article that was on the front page of the Washington Post, where the Bush administration or the Obama administration is finalizing their legal reasons and their policies on terror, on how they're going to conduct their war on terror. And this stems all the way from the Bush administration, actually. And so, now, here we are in 2013, and they're finally trying to tell us how they're going to run this war that they've been running for 10 years now. And it's appalling that they don't even have a legal argument for anything that they do, and they need to stop. They need to get back to where Congress is the one that declares war. Congress is the one that has the purse strings and uses that ability to stop a out-of-control president like President Obama.
Sure. Yeah, a good argument can be made, a legitimate argument, that we haven't fought a legal war since World War II, and yet we've been in over 60 military conflicts since then, not one of which had the constitutionally required congressional declaration of war. So every war that we've been involved in has been illegal for the past 6+ decades. And technically,
right,
that would make every president since then a war criminal, would it not?
My personal opinion is yes.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the way I believe. I think that that these wars are fought in back rooms of smoke-filled rooms of the elite and the powerful, and they're not.
Sure.
They have the fodder is the lives of, like, my children.
Yeah.
You know, these are, luckily, it doesn't, we're not being bombed every day like they are in in Pakistan. But what they do is they also use the fear technique, where, like this movie that recently came out, that everyone that looks like them, acts like them, is a terrorist. And I spent, to be honest with you, I spent a good amount of my youth up in the tribal areas of Pakistan. And it was some of the most fun and some of the most freeing times of my life. And I never felt fear. I never felt that they were oppressing me or that they cared about my religion or where I was from. This is not a war on America. This is a war on the ability of people to run their own lives. That's really what it's about.
Yeah. And Americans are just as much victims as the countries that we invade, because we're getting caught up in this dragnet that
absolutely
we have no business being involved in. Yeah. Yeah,
and we should look out for what's going on in North Africa right now, because I was listening to the news the other day, and one news reporter described it as the possibility of an Afghan-type war on the doorstep of Europe.
Sure.
And if we allow this to continue the way it's been going, and to listen to our Secretary of Defense over the weekend, I think it should strike fear in every American.
Sure. And we're at that point now. This comes from Carl in Arizona. He asks, have the guests thought about working directly with Glenn Greenwald, who was also outspoken about Obama's drone warfare? I'm not even sure who that is.
We are in constant contact with Glenn Greenwald.
Okay, great. We'll take one more here about that. Dundee in somewhere in the U.S. didn't list a state here. Dundee asks, is there much of a difference between centrist Obama and centrist Romney?
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as I was concerned, more of my friends are happier today that Obama's in place. I'm sure it's going to be a little bit better for those that are, hurting and suffering. Obama's more of a president that has a feel for the people. I believe that. I think he's a genuinely nice person, but I feel that he's just as big a war criminal as George Bush was, and I don't believe that Obama's being manipulated by anybody. I think he's a smart person, and he knows the Constitution well. And I think he just believes that when you become president, that it's time to throw all that your previous ideals out the window and just run the country the way the elite want the country to be run.
Yeah, because he's the decider.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
and he doesn't use those terms. You know, we're lucky because we have a president now that has a little more, is distinguished, and is more articulate than the previous one, and definitely dresses better. But
and doesn't get knocked out by pretzels quite so often.
Not that much difference between Romney and Obama.
Yeah, I agree. He's just more refined, but it's the same game beneath the surface. It's just better window dressing. Anyway, I guess that's all the time we've got. I know you've got to get running.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us, and keep up the great work. Appreciate it.
All right. Call again. Bye now.
Okay. Take care. Okay, folks, that's it for this week. Join us next week. We're going to be joined by Richard Falk, UN special reporter on human rights in Palestine. So he's going to have some great behind-the-scenes information for us in that regard. You don't want to miss it. So we'll see you then, folks. Have a great week. Take care.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com. at DelphiInternational.com. And her website is www.DelphiInternational.com.